Welcome, everybody. I'm here today with Udyan Bose from NetElixir. So say hello, Udyan.
Hi. Hi, Bhadav. Thanks for having me on this podcast.
Right. So this is going to be an interesting one because you have been involved in digital marketing, I guess digital advertising for, since 2004. So that's a hugely long time.
So my first brush into digital marketing was in a slightly interesting startup, Bhadav. This was with a company called Party Gaming. And the three of engineering schoolmates, we really built the world's largest online gaming company. So I was lucky enough to be a part of that founding team. I was there for about a year and a half and then moved on to start NetElixir in 2004. Yes.
Yeah, so it's an amazing story. So, I mean, with such experience, I think what I want to do on this podcast is really explore digital marketing and take it from a startup or a small business point of view. So there's so much written and talked about digital marketing and how to make a difference and how to spend money, et cetera, that it's very, very confusing. And it's a very confusing landscape. And it's hard for people to know what is the right advice and what is just the fluff that people talk about. And given the fact that you've been involved with this since 2004, you obviously have seen all the trends and you understand, you probably understand this better than most than anyone else I would have come across or met. So before we get into the main story, now you touched on a little bit starting NetElixir, but why did you start this in 2004? Because the landscape would have been very, very different and pretty quite barren. So what gave you the idea to start NetElixir then?
So I think like every startup, the story is, I mean, I was, as I mentioned, at Party Gaming. So I ran the party bingo business for the company. Back then, I think Google was still extremely small. And I was also sort of leading the marketing initiatives of the company as well. And then that's where we sort of saw that this pay-per-click advertising was very interesting because till that time, if you remember, way back in 2002, 2003, it was more of an impression-based or a view-based advertising, essentially, the CPM models, et cetera, et cetera. And I felt that someone, if they click on an ad and only the advertiser has to pay only when someone clicks on an ad, seems to be a pretty direct expression of the intent effectively. So we just sort of took a plunge very simply on the fact that why should someone, let us say, why should Bhairav click on an ad if he doesn't want to, right? And if someone is clicking on an ad, Bhairav must be pretty interested in sort of finding out more. And this seems to be an interesting business model. If it takes off, we'll do well. So with that, sort of moved on from Party Gaming to start this company. And we really launched about 8 months before Google did its IPO. So it was like Jan 2004. And Google's IPO, I believe, was in July or August. August, I believe, if I'm not wrong. And we just got the timing right. So like with most parts about startups, I think timing is critical. And we just got the timing right.
So one of my questions to you is that I was listening quite recently to a Business Daily, one of the BBC shows, BBC World. And it was talking about the myth of online advertising. So there is a question that's asked as to can we trust the analytics that we get from people like Google or Facebook? And do we really know what underlies that? So, for example, we know we spend a lot of our marketing budget based on what we're being told. And how accurate is the information that we're being given about people who are, where they're coming from, their age, et cetera, et cetera. So from your perspective, having run this business for a number of years, right, what do you, and you're, obviously what your business is doing is helping people optimize the paid ads and the campaign ads. You know, what do you tell people when they're looking to set something up? How should they start gathering information? Should they rely solely on things like Google Analytics, Facebook? Is there anything else that they can do? How do they start beginning to build up their campaigns?
Right. So I'll try to answer this question. This is a great question, Madam, on two parts. And it comes at a time when I think, and we'll be sort of discussing this a little later, I guess, about the cookie-less world, et cetera, et cetera. So I just try to demystify some of these pieces. So effectively, if you look at digital marketing, and first of all, it's sort of putting it in a relative context, right? So you have the entire world of advertising, and advertising for most parts was almost like throwing mud at the wall and hoping something sticks. But the measurability was not as high. Now, with digital marketing, the measurability went up to a different level altogether. We could really sort of just track, measure, and everything. In certain cases, I would probably almost argue that it went a little too far. And that's the reason all these companies hit that big privacy wall, essentially. because of which now the world would be moving from a third-party cookie system to a first-party cookie system. Because I think a lot of the companies sort of went a little too far. So, but having said that, if you really look at, again, the media publication or the media outlet mentioning about this thing, so it's still very measurable. Now, we really have to put it from a perspective, is it really leading to the desired outcome that you're thinking of, right? So just think of it this way, you're spending X dollars or X pounds, and you are getting a certain number of overall revenue in return. Is there a very clear match? Are you able to justify that? And if you are able to justify that, I think digital marketing or digital advertising is definitely working for you. And a good proof that a lot of people are really thinking of it from that perspective is the recent results of Google's results came out yesterday, right? They had a 34% year-on-year growth in Q1 and so on and so forth. So this is a very clear proof that the model has been validated because it works. It sort of leads to outcomes and you can really quantify the revenue it is able to drive through this process. So in terms of just the validity of all the data which, let us say, Google and Facebook provides, I don't think it's appropriate for me to comment too much on this part, but I think all the digital marketers, whether it be us or whether it be any other company, we sort of work with that data to really sort of look at. But I think since we are focusing on the outcome, the simple point that we ask is, if we are investing X dollars and we are getting Y dollars in return, does it really make sense? If it makes sense, then digital marketing works in a very holistic level. Now, in terms of, I think, digital marketing is something which we have been seeing a massive rush of people getting in, who are, there is a bit of a migration almost from traditional media advertising onto digital advertising as well, which will continue. In fact, it really has accelerated. And in fact, we recently published, we believe in the US, Mother's Day may actually be the start of what we call the economic hyper boom when it comes to the e-commerce space. We're really looking at some abnormal spikes in how much people are investing and what people are doing. So understandably, for someone new to the industry, it may seem a little too overwhelming. So I really wanted to just take maybe 2 minutes to simplify the entire process. The first process is, I mean, we use a framework which now has been tested over 17 years now, Harold, which is called the GOST model. Start with a very specific goal or an objective. What exactly do you want to achieve in terms of a certain revenue number? And is there a secondary metric, let us say, return on investment or cost per acquisition? So be very clear on that. And it has to be an absolute number. So when you talk about a revenue goal, it should not be a range of this or a percentage increase. It should be, let us say, I want $3 million from my digital marketing spend, and I am really willing to spend a cost per acquisition of this on a last click basis, et cetera, et cetera. We'll be very specific on this thing. Then the second part, and this is something probably one of the things that we have been really, really sort of preaching out here everywhere in the workshops that we are doing. Do not dive into the channels at that point in time. Just ask yourself a question, how exactly will you get to that goal? So I'm talking about what are the strategic initiatives that you would really need to follow to get to your goals. And strategic initiative is not starting off a campaign in Facebook or starting off a campaign in Google. That's basically more of a tactic. Strategic initiative can be, I will really increase maybe my market presence or my market share in a particular market or a geography. It can be, I really want to go after certain customer segments and really sort of win more from this particular segment. It can be I want to introduce a new product in the market and I'm really looking for maybe adoption rate of this much. So whatever it is, start with a bigger business goal. So you start with a goal and then you come up with a strategic initiative for each one of them. And those initiatives have to add up to your overall goals, right? So let us say you're talking about targeting a particular market. Again, I'm just giving a simple example from the US. Let us say you want to target New York and LA, right? So what is the overall incremental business that you are expecting to get just from these two markets? So you really have a particular definite number. What is the incremental revenue that you are able to or expecting by selling a certain category of products? Again, you have an incremental number and so on. And these have to add to your overall goal. And once you have the initiatives, then go on to the next one, which is called the tactics. So how exactly are you going to increase your, let us say, the number of customers that who shop from your brand or your site in LA or in New York? Then you get into the tactics, I'll do Facebook advertising but I'll be very specifically geo-targeted to only these particular customer segments. I'll do Google advertising. I'll be sort of focusing on these zip codes and so on. And I'll try to sort of just have a separate mobile ad created for the Google advertising, et cetera, et cetera. Is there any possibility of doing any Amazon ads to really get to that part as well? So those are the things. So just sort of breaking down granularly will be really helpful. And then the last part probably is the most important one. Measure each and everything. So really have a KPI for each one of the tactics, right? When you're running a Facebook ad, it would really have a, I want to invest, let us say, X dollars to get Y dollars in return. It is a very specific metric, and you sort of just try to see as to how you're comparing. And then really just focus on the execution constantly on this part. So that is one advice that I would have for anyone starting into digital advertising. Break it down into finite plan and really sort of measure against the plan. The second part is there are a lot of tools out there as well. In fact, one of the sites that we launched way back, almost 10 years back now, 2012, was a site called LXRMarketplace.com. So this was just entirely almost like, again, that entire concept of paying back or giving back, essentially. Right. So we said that we have been a startup for a very long time. And effectively, we struggle to identify those right digital marketing tools, whether it is SEO tools or paid search tools or social media tools. We said that why don't we utilize our strength in technology building as well as digital marketing and just start launching maybe a tool every 4 or 5 months. And we have currently about 35 digital marketing tools. And the best part is all of them are free. So there is no cost, no charge at all. Anyone really needs to pay for using those LXR marketplace tools. So that's something that can be a very, very useful way of sort of getting in and just trying to expand your presence in digital marketing without really having to spend much.
So this is very interesting because everything that you've mentioned here around goals, tactics, measuring is basic business, right? It's something that you should be doing regardless. And I think what tends to happen is when you start talking about digital marketing and paid advertising, the conversation changes to click-through rates and cost per mille. Right. Right, and CPM as you mentioned before, so it transforms and everyone suddenly throws out the window all of the traditional business things that you should be doing, return on investment, which is the key one, right? And then everyone starts talking about, well, have you got your Facebook group set up? Have you got your Instagram channel set up? And this is one of the things I've had to constantly battle with people when I've been talking to them in in Atom, and we've been doing our own digital marketing, and people say, why haven't you got your Instagram set up? And I said, well, what's my return on investment in Instagram? Are my key target acquisitions there? If they are, how much are they spending? Where are they? What would I need to do to get in front of them? Yeah. What's the actual goal for this? And everyone says, well, no, you need to have it because everyone else is on it.
Right.
And I think that's where everyone starts getting it. It's a FOMO, right? Fear of missing out that occurs.
I completely agree with you, Mara. So I think one of the struggles that we have now faced over 17 years is just proving to people that there is nothing scary about it. So that's right. So, I mean, I think, unfortunately, there are a lot of folks who just try to make it too difficult or too complex. But as you rightly mentioned, it is basic fundamental business. There is nothing scary about this. You, as long as you are in control of your goals and you are really in control of how much money am I making for the amount that I invest, that's pretty much what it is. Right? All these channels are tactics and you can really find out many experts, I'm pretty sure, who can really help you implement these tactics. Some obviously have a different level of expertise, but that's more of tactical level. But where people get it wrong is when they jump into tactics without really getting the goals, objectives, and the strategic initiatives right.
Yeah, I completely agree with you because I think it's strange that you focus on the actual, the measurements, right? You forget, you concentrate on, I've got a conversion rate of 3.4%, or I've got, I've had 100 visitors to my website. People tend to forget that you can have a conversion rate of 1%. If 1% hits your targets, then that's fine. And if your 1% means that you spent a small amount of money, your return investments, very short, then that's fine, right? There's nothing wrong with that.
Right, exactly. So I think people have gotten too embroiled in the tactical part and tactical measurement, right? So 3.4% for a campaign, but what is the context? What goal are you trying to achieve from that perspective? Right? I don't know whether it is good or bad. 3.4% looks great. But if you really put the context that maybe all of your other campaigns are doing 10%, it is terrible, right? So 3.4% looks great, but it can actually look even better if all of the other campaigns that you are running is 0.5%, Right. So it's basically all context. And I think a lot of people get too mired in the outcomes rather than focusing on creating a process and a system which drives predictable revenue. So if there was one message which I really wanted to communicate to all of your listeners, is it is possible in digital marketing. And we have done it, or I have personally done it for 17 years at Netflix, 2 years before that at Party Gaming. It is possible. There is a system and method in which you can run predictable and consistently profitable digital marketing campaign. But you, I think this simplistic framework can really help you as a first step. But don't get too mired with the outcomes, because outcome just probably can help or hurt your blood pressure. Other than that, I don't think outcomes really have too much of a meaning. Pretty much.
It's, yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think it's a weird thing about technology, right? As soon as you start put the word digital in into something, then suddenly everyone starts thinking completely. They think they're something think differently. So can you talk through a bit around Netflix? How do you engage with customers? Because obviously, if you go to your website, you can see some of the results that you've given to the likes of Lenovo and Kansas City State. You can see that, you know, you've really made an impact there, which looks like a dream, right? Anyone who's looking at that website goes, hey, I want a piece of this. So, you know, what's your magic formula? What do you do when you engage with clients?
I think the first part is, I mean, this was, I think, a pain point that I had observed, because which one of the key drivers of starting Netflix. So at Party Gaming, for example, where we used to spend a lot. I mean, we were large, let us just put it that way. So we were one of the probably the 10 top advertisers for, let us say, Overture or Yahoo at that time, or Google and so on, both in the world. Right. So one of the things which I struggled with, the agency did not spend enough time trying to understand my business. They didn't ask me enough questions. So that is what has really led to really the foundation of Netflix. Is we start it almost like the, just think of it, that very experienced family physician that you have who sits by your bedside when you are sick and really holds your, sort of feels your pulse and just patiently listens to what challenges you have, what are your overall business aspirations. The first part is as simple as that. Understanding as to what Lenovo's goals were. Not only for, we started with Lenovo in 2010, perhaps. It has been now 11 years working with them globally, which makes us, I think, the longest standing partner of Lenovo anywhere in the world. Now, we just started with simple questions. What do you want to achieve today? And where do you see really Lenovo's growth maybe in 2015? I mean, I'm talking about 2010 at that time, right? So we were able to get that perspective. And then we asked a ton of questions about who are your customers? What are some of the key differentiators you have? What is your overall product launch plan or pattern? What geographies or markets do you really want to strengthen in? What is your strength? What is not your strength? So it's a very open conversation, which took quite some time. It took, believe it or not, almost about 2 days to go through all these conversations, getting a full dump and understanding of the business. Now, I think for any mid-size or smaller business, it may not be 2 days, but at least it will be half a day to understand that. Once you have done that, then we use the same GOST model, what I mentioned about goals, objectives, strategy, and tactics. But what we do is we do a collaborative workshop where we say that what are your goals? And the goals have to come from you. I mean, if you are our customer, we have to be able to pinpoint the goals and objectives. And then the strategic initiative, we can ask you questions. But our contribution to the strategic initiative formulation is just asking questions. But they have to be defined by you. So the goals, objectives, and strategic initiatives will be defined by you. It's extremely important for every business in the world to really have a control on these two things. Because if you depend on vendors or agencies or partners to define them, you are setting yourself up for failure. So you really have to be in control of your goals, objectives, and how exactly, what are the strategic initiatives. The agency should really have a process or a method in which they can really help you streamline and think about those things. And once you have done that, then our team, we sort of went back, came up with an entire plan, which we call the operating plan. So you should advertise in Facebook from X to Y, and this is what the target segment is. It was a very, very thorough and detailed plan, which was then broken down into this is what you can expect in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 120 days, 1 year, and so on and so forth. And this is why we believe that this is the right plan. Now, I really wanted to emphasize the power of why in this case, and primarily because in most cases, I think, the advertiser may not really know as much probably as a specialist agency like us, just because we have been around. It's not that they don't know. No, it's just we have been around for a long time and we have really gone through multiple experiences, worked with a lot of customers and so on. So that's where we are able to bring that experience and explain why. And the why, and I really wanted to emphasize this, why has to be explained in a simplistic manner. Because the advertiser is a business person. They are not really a digital marketing specialist or a search marketing expert. So you really have to cut off all those digital marketing jargons and really get to the core crux of the business, the gut, so as to say, of the business. Once you've been able to do that, then essentially it's just going ahead and execution and really sort of following through and coming up with a plan and so on. We have also really built our own customer intelligence platform, Pearl, which has really helped us a lot. Since we have been, again, in this space for a long time, and we specialize in the retail e-commerce and the direct-to-consumer segments, we found a very interesting statistic almost for all of these e-commerce companies. We found that about 10 to 15% of all the online shoppers for any retail e-commerce company, they account for anywhere between 40 to 50% of the revenues, right? So these are the high-value customers. So we started building the customer intelligence platform about 4 years back, where the idea was really in an anonymized manner. How can we really reverse engineer as to the high-value customers, look at as to what their path to purchase is. For example, let us say Pearl is a high-value customer, and again, we don't know your name, nothing about you. But for us, you are probably a particular number. But we know that Bhairav's journey started with the first click on Facebook, coming to the website, and then essentially Bhairav sort of came to the website and then went, bounced back, and then came back next day through Google and finally made a purchase and so on. So we are able to sort of track back and understand the overall channel mix. That really helps us to do the media mix modeling in a lot more data-driven manner. We obviously are making those iterations because our platform, one advantage is it's basically has the flexibility to run on first-party data. So while we'll be losing some of the top-of-the-funnel data, but I think we'll get much more rich data around the funnel as well. So those platform, as well as a very simplistic listen, understand your business, and run this cost model, I think is what.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you mentioned that, actually, because I remember, so I was the CTO for a large e-commerce business in Norway back in 2008, right? So we were doing obviously a lot. We were one of Google's largest partners or customers, sorry, in Scandinavia at the time. And one of the difficulties we had was attribution. And right. that's always been a key right. issue. But what we did was marry data that we could get from Google and other sources that we had, mm-hmm. but also really spend some time looking at our customer base to understand how do they move through the system? What do right. they buy? When do they buy? And right. as you say, we found 20% of the customers gave 80% of their revenue. Right? Yeah. And if you can dig into those customers, understand what their motivation, where they're coming from, and find more yeah. of them is what you really exactly. want at the end of the day.
That's right? exactly.
Which goes back to what you were saying before, which I think is if there's anything that people should take from this podcast is that it really goes back to business fundamentals, right? You don't chase the rainbow and don't think about things in the terms of LinkedIn or getting email campaigns out or newsletters out or getting pushing visitors to your site, because you can push a million visitors to your site but none of them are interested and your bounce rate is 99%. What's the point? And I think that's key. So I know that we've got quite a lot, I guess, to get through still. But what I would like to concentrate on now is the future, because you've seen everything, right? All the ups and downs and a great deal of things. Yeah. And you mentioned it before, so the third-party cookie piece. So could you explain this for people who may not understand or know it's coming?
Right. So essentially, I can just to give you a bit of a dump. So third-party cookies or cookies, let us say, essentially help us to track the customer journey, right? So effectively, I think the third-party cookie is any cookie which is not your own. So not your own tracking pixel, someone else's, it becomes a third party. So that's, I think, in a very simplistic sense. Now, if you look at advertising, what I just mentioned about Alexa Insights or any other such platform, the way that we are able to track these customer journeys are primarily because of using third party cookies. In this case, let us say Alexa Insights may have a third party cookie, or we can use Facebook's third party cookie and so on and so forth. Now, what is going to be happening in Q1 2022? Google has announced that Chrome would be deprecating all of these or blocking all these third-party cookies, or providing an option to block all of these third-party cookies. And effectively, we have recently seen this week the IDFA and Apple sort of coming in, which is, again, you can't really accurately track and assign a particular or attribute a particular end conversion. Let us say, for example, if you're using the Facebook app and so on. So that's the thing. So what would happen is, I mean, that part goes off, and what becomes important and which would be allowed is the first party cookie. So let us say you are Lenovo, and you can use your own cookie pool to identify, just because the customer is giving you permission to do that. And it's basically, but you can't really share that information with others who are not really a part of Lenovo or your entire tracking system. So that's what is happening. And as a result of it, there would be three things which would be, I think, impacted. The first part is the attribution that you mentioned. It will be really difficult to attribute the entire sequence of customer journey to the different channels very accurately. I mean, once they land on the website, you can really drop your own first party cookie. But tracking overall, I think, becomes a lot more complex, and attributing as to how much weightage should an end conversion or Facebook get for an end conversion becomes a lot more difficult. The second part would be the more of an addressability. In many cases, you may not be able to address as to what is the specific cause for this. Now we are able to pinpoint the channel, that this channel is not really performing very well, and why don't I really switch some budgets from channel X to channel Y and so on. So the addressability would suffer as well. And the third part, obviously, is the end measurement and accuracy. In many cases, the measurement part is more of the results. So people would see a quick decline in terms of the last click or whatever the conversions are, unless and until they are able to build their own system, which is able to track this thing. So that's what essentially happening, addressability, measurement, and the attribution gets affected. On the positive side, though, Bhairav, I think what would happen is people would be working with the first-party cookie. And I think platforms like Alexa Insights, if you have the customer intelligence platform, will be able to utilize the first-party cookie pool. And we literally will be able to work on much, much, much more rich overall data sets. Data set becomes a lot more rich, effectively, and as a result of which, we'll be able to really help the advertiser or the marketer who's using Alexa Insights platform, let us say, market a lot more responsibly and effectively. When I say responsibly, I really wanted to call that out as well. Because a lot of the retargeting which is still done is pretty interruptive, for lack of a better word, right? Hopefully that would become a lot more effective and non-interruptive as well. And I would probably even sort of take a bit of a bet that there may be a possibility for us to anticipate future behavior a lot more in a well-defined manner compared to if you had used the third-party overall pool. Because this is your cookie pool, and every customer has a different pattern of engagement with unique sites. And just by saying that using the third-party cookie pool, what worked for Macy's will work for another company, does not really hold good. Here, we are sort of working with the data pool, let us say, of Macy's as an example. And we are able to extend that. So I think that accuracy and the predictive behavior also will be, I think, better.
So in many ways, do you think that we got lazy through third-party cookies? Because basically what it was you drop a cookie in, and then you just do a whole bunch of remarketing, and it didn't really matter where that remarketing was, but you just do it and follow the people around, and you spend money.
We actually did that. Yeah. So we actually did, and as a result of it, I think one of the things which, unfortunately, and I can sort of call it out, I know it's a pretty strong statement I am making, as a result of it, the quality of creatives became quite subpar in many cases.
Yeah.
If you look at the overall retargeting creatives, one, they are interruptive, so they are not really accurate, right? I just bought a car. Why are you sort of still continuing to retarget me or target me? I sort of bought a car. I'm not really sort of likely to buy a car every week. I wish I could, but I probably can't, and I probably won't. And the second part is the quality of creatives also is extremely subpar. So I hope that this would really provide that big opportunity for companies which have a very strong creative content development background to really sort of produce that authentic creative, which can be a massive differentiator.
I think also it will, I mean, as I mentioned before, with the e-commerce company I worked with, there was very, very hard to do a lot of the attribution and following the customers as they move around and figuring out
right.
Which was the last click that bought the sale. And we had to get very creative. And as you say, we had to get very creative, but we also had to do a lot of analysis and a lot of work on our own business to understand things, and that served them in good stead ever since, simply because I can see that business is growing and growing and growing, right? And we did a lot of good work back in the day. And I think what you find now, keep going back to this mm-hmm. set of people that will only look at click-through rates. But because we're only looking at the tactics and those kinds of vanity measurements, no mm-hmm. one's doing the hard work to really understand what is being done underneath. So I think that's where I think things get quite interesting. And it'll mean that a lot of the people who are offering false promises will get found out, right? And that will kick. So where do you see the future now? I mean, obviously, you've seen many trends over the years. What do you see as the next 3-4 years? What do you see is going to be the main things coming through?
So if you track, again, if you just in the world of search marketing, in this sense, right? When you started off, again, the world of Ask Jeeves, remember those Look Smart, Ask Jeeves, and all these companies. And essentially, I think at that point in time, sort of Google came in, and if you really look at the classic typed in anything, any search word, in many cases, the results which Google sort of showed were fairly inaccurate. They were all over the place. I'm talking about 2002, 2003, 2004, probably to an extent. Then they got a lot better as they started collecting this huge pool and working this thing. Then slowly as it really evolved, they started putting in the context part as well, right? So they got better in terms of more accurate and better results and so on. And then I think the overall, almost like a tipping point came sometime in 2013-14 when they started applying the AI part as well. So it became a lot more accurate and so on and so forth. As we see moving forward, I think we are very clearly going to be moving into a lot of work on anticipatory search as well, almost like a predictive search thing, right? So, I mean, I'm able to predict as to what would, let us say, paragraph we've been sort of typing in. And now these days, voice search is pretty much popular as well. What is paragraph we would like to say as well, right? To an extent, the anticipatory search, I think with the evolution of AI, I think would become a lot stronger as well. In this entire, 17 years, I think we have seen two other really interesting developments. The first development is that of the discovery part of serendipitous search, right? Who thought that Facebook can even become a paid media channel? Right? Facebook was something to socialize. And honestly speaking, for one, I am the first one to admit that I got it completely wrong. I never thought that people can really engage in so much of transactional discussions and there can be even a paid social model. I was completely wrong because that was, I think, because I was focused always on the intent-driven search. I didn't really focus as much on what I call the serendipitous search or the discovery-led search. Suddenly, sort of comes and pop up. You don't really catch those impulse purchases to an extent. So that was, I think, a very important trend which came in. And now what we are seeing in the search is obviously with the rise of Amazon advertising, especially over the last about 2 years now, we are very clearly seeing a very different level of search, a much more deep product-led search which is getting in there. And with every search which is conducted on Amazon, their engine becomes only better just because of the use of AI, essentially, that they are doing. So that's where I think in terms of future, I would call out probably three things. The first part is the importance of the anticipatory search is what is sort of going on. I don't even know whether it is fair to say search. So I would really move on to my second thesis. I believe there can be search need not be always intent-driven. It can be serendipitous or it can be almost like walking in a shopping mall. Or the mall of Amazon or the mall of Walmart or something. So it's more of a browsing and buying. And the last part, which I think I am also fairly bullish about, is we would see a tremendous emergence now of essentially the impact of social commerce and AR, VR. So I would just think of almost like replicating, let us say we go out with a bunch of friends to shop physically, right, to a mall or whatever it is. With the advent of AR, VR, essentially, there may be a possibility that we may have almost like we are transported to a second life, there's a virtual life, where we can really engage on those shopping malls and these virtual shopping patterns. We all have maybe our overall personas or avatars, essentially, on that part. And AI will sort of make that experience a lot more predictable as well. So those are the three things I would probably sort of call out.
It's very interesting, actually, because those ideas I saw over the last last 10 years, I've seen similar ideas that you're talking mm-hmm. about being pushed out, but the technology really wasn't there. And I think now the technology is there for a lot of the, as you say, augmented reality or even kind of AI-driven social commerce, which I think is big. And there's a lot of work being done on that in universities.
Yeah.
So now we're moving on to towards the end, but it's the shameless plug. Shameless promotion piece. So, Net Alexa, you've been in the US for 14 years now. You're moving out into Europe. So tell us a little bit about that and how you're expanding out into Europe and what kind of businesses you'd like to engage with.
So overall, I think, Bharav, I think we have been very fortunate and lucky. We have been around in the US market for about 14, 15 years now. And we recently set up an office in Sweden, in Stockholm, and that's where that's sort of very... So that, I think, is the first focus that we are seeing. The overall global markets have different sort of almost like an evolution curve. And we believe compared to some of the markets, US may be a little ahead in terms of the overall adoption curve of new technologies, etc. So we asked ourselves a simple question. When we have been so successful in the US, can some of these parts that we have learned, can we really customize it for some of the European markets and even the Middle Eastern markets and so on? So a big focus for us moving forward would be expanding into Europe, and with Nordics as the base, or Sweden as the base, and then also really sort of just getting into and trying to really get a foothold in the Middle Eastern market as well. The second part is with the first party cookie, and now we have sort of tested out our own technology and XR Insights. We are pretty excited because now I think our customers really have a solution whereby they don't need to be concerned that, oh gosh, what will happen in the first party cookie world. And I think typically as a company which has taken a lot of time in being a pride in terms of being a problem solver, I think we have a solution. So they don't need to be scared now. If you're working with us, we can really manage you through this transition because of the technology platform. That's the second part. And the third part is, I think we are and will always be an extremely and obsessively culture-focused company where we really sort of cherish this just being a joyful and happy culture and an experimentative culture overall. So I think overall, we are really looking at expanding our team globally with diverse folks everywhere in the world. So those are the three things which we are extremely excited about.
So one thing I wanted to know, you talked about giving back in the five questions. So anyone who's listened to the original trailer, you'll talk, Udayan talks about some of the work he does in giving back. Can you just talk a little bit about that you're doing? Because I see there's a university that you run, but also you sponsor
children. So in India. Talking about the foundation, so this was interesting, Bharav, and a little bit of a story around that as well. So in 2015, during Christmas, we were there in India. So me and my wife, we walked into one of the government-run schools in Hyderabad, a city in the southern India. And government-run schools in India are, extremely underfunded. And just to give you an example, the school of about 800 girls is one bathroom. That's the sort of situation. It's absolutely an absolute state of mess. So we walk into this class of 10th grade class, essentially. And we asked the girl, there are about 108 girls. I asked them a simple question, and they are mostly from the neighborhood slums. And I asked them a simple question, how many of you think you can score 80% in the 10th grade exam? And first, I mean, they were not very comfortable with us suddenly walking in, and the girls were obviously very shy as well. And the three girls feebly raised their hand. And then I said that suppose we were to select about three of you based on your 10th grade exam marks and sponsor your entire education cost for the 11th and the 12th grade, that's the high school in India, and 4 years of college anywhere in India, and then offer you a job in our company with so much salary. That was important because for them, the money at the end of it, the carrot has to be pretty strong. So about 14 girls raised their hands. And finally, we had about 21 girls when the results came out in 2016. They all got more than 80%. Nine girls had got more than 90% as well. So we elected two and three. So one girl I really wanted to call out of these initial batch of two girls that we selected, her name is Swati. Her mother breaks stones, Bharav, and she makes about maybe $10 to $15 a month. Swati's dad passed away when she was four, and there was no way for her mother to really support her on education, right? So she got into the program, and her mother had decided to get her married away. Her marriage was sort of set in June 2016. And this was a girl, just for all of the listeners, who was 13 years of age. Right, so we are talking about some absolute crazy stuff out here, but that's what it looks like. So she got into the program, and very proud to say that now she has completed second year of engineering in one of the top engineering schools in the country. And last year, she sent me a text last month where she said that she has now really been the valedictorian of the topper of the entire out of a group of about 4,000 engineering students. She has stood first. Essentially, now this was a girl who, if she had not really got into this, probably would have been married and with at least like one kid, if not two kids and so on. So it really sort of feels good. And we have now extended it to about 12 girls. But yeah, I mean, Udaan, it is UDAAN, is the name of the foundation. It's called udaan-trust.org. UDAAN-trust.org. And you can see some of the work that we are doing to really, really sort of fight this terrible evil of child marriage through education.
That sounds fantastic. Sounds amazing. So before we end, how do people get in contact with you? How do they get in contact with NetXiv?
You can sort of find me on LinkedIn, Udayan Bose. I think I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. Or you can directly sort of email me. It's my first name, Udayan, UDAYAN, at netelixir.com, netelixir.com. So that's probably the best way to sort of get in touch with me.
So it's been a pleasure talking to you. I think we've really unmasked a lot and really reinforced the fact that if you are looking to get into digital marketing, think of it. Don't get carried away by numbers. Think of it more as a business and return on investment. And I truly think what you guys are doing with the foundation is amazing work. Obviously, there's more and more people need to do that. And I've been looking at something similar with Atom, but hopefully we can get there at some point. So that's great.
Thank you so much. It's absolutely been a pleasure. Absolutely a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like what you hear, then please subscribe with the Atom Ventures podcast. And you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all the great podcasting sites. Please also leave a review. And if you want to get in contact, then please visit our site, atomcto.com. You can find us on LinkedIn under Atom Ventures and Atom CTO. And you can email us at info@atomcto.com.